Today's podcast is brought to you by the Prime original series, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, now nominated for 14 Emmy Awards, including Outstanding Comedy Series and Outstanding Lead Actress in a Comedy Series for Rachel Brosnahan's performance as Midge Maisel. Consider it marvelous in all categories. Hello and welcome back to season two of Chasing Emmy, the podcast for Emmy voters, their friends, and Lynette's kids. I am Henry Goldblatt, editor-in-chief of Entertainment Weekly, and I'm here with my two friends and co-hosts, Lynette Rice.
I don't think my kid has listened to one of these.
Oh my God, I'm both sad for her and for us. And Kristen Baldwin, TV critic at Entertainment Weekly.
My kid has definitely not listened to any of these.
If we put some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in or something like that, Kristen, would your kid be more likely to?
Yes, or he also enjoys a show on Netflix called The Day My Butt Went Psycho.
Is that really a show?
Yes, unfortunately.
I gotta search for that.
So this episode's gonna be all about the series The Day My Butt Went Psycho.
That's a good one. What do you enter that show in? What category is that? Is that limited series?
Outstanding effort to make a parent want to shoot herself in the head.
There you go.
Well, Kristen, I was trying to tee you up because we are going to be talking about limited series today on Chasing Emmy and all of the actors and creators that go into creating these fine, fine works. So the criteria for a limited series is really interesting. You have to have two or more episodes that have a total running time of at least 150 minutes, and it must tell a quote-unquote complete and non-recurring story with no ongoing storylines. And I believe this was changed because of the Downton Abbey situation. Kristen, can you explain that to us?
Yeah, Downton Abbey initially was, you know, entered as a limited series, and I believe it won. And then, of course, it came back, and it became a big hit. And it obviously was no longer a limited series, and at that point was entered into drama. And, you know, a lot of these shows, like last year's winner, Big Little Lies, that was a limited series. It was supposed to have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and no second season. But as we know now, it's got a season two. So should they enter again, they would have to go into the drama category. It seems like a lot of these limited series, the networks like to just call them that in case they don't succeed. And then they can say, oh, we were never going to do a season two anyway. But then when it becomes a big hit, it becomes a drama and they have to sort of shift their strategy in terms of awards.
Well, here's a question that's going to blow your mind. American Horror Story has been submitted an outstanding limited series throughout its run. But this upcoming season is going to be a crossover between two seasons of American Horror Story. To me, that seems to violate the limited series rules.
You know what? I think they'd be hard-pressed to have voters be able to explain what the connections were between any of the seasons and or explain what is happening in any given scene of American Horror Story. So they can probably get away with it.
What's interesting about this category, too, and we're going to be going through it in the show today, is that they give an award for Outstanding Limited Series. They also give an award for Television Movie. But then the actors in the limited series and TV movies, they compete against each other. So there's no, like, just Outstanding Limited Series actor or Outstanding Movie actor. They're all sort of lumped together. So your work in an hour and a half may be judged by against somebody else's work who's done 10 or 12 hours.
Obviously, the networks are making fewer just straight out movies now. And so there are probably fewer actors who would qualify for an acting category that was just about movies. But it does mean then that you have actors who maybe did a one off movie that no one saw up against people like Penelope Cruz or whatever. It feels a little lopsided in the acting categories.
All right, Kristen, I want to start with Outstanding Lead Actor in a Limited Series or Movie. Can you take us through who won last year and who's nominated this year?
Outstanding Lead Actor in a Limited Series or Movie. Last year, the winner was Riz Ahmed from The Night Of, and he was fantastic. This year's nominees, Antonio Banderas for playing Pablo Picasso in Genius, Picasso. Darren Criss, give him the Emmy now, playing Andrew Cunanan in The Assassination of Gianni Versace. Benedict Cumberbatch for Patrick Melrose. He played Patrick Melrose. Jeff Daniels, he played John O'Neill in The Looming Tower. He's also nominated in supporting for a different role. John Legend for playing Jesus Christ in Jesus Christ Superstar Live in Concert. And finally, Jesse Plemons, gotta love him, playing Robert Daly in USS Callister, the Black Mirror episode.
Before we get to who should and will win, were there any notable snubs in this category, Lynette?
Kyle MacLachlan for Twin Peaks, simply because of the history there. Michael B. Jordan for Fahrenheit 451. This movie kind of came and went with no hooyah, but it's Michael B. Jordan. And I think the biggest, definitely the biggest snub was Al Pacino at Paterno. This is another movie that kind of fell flat, unfortunately. I think people were turning to it to hear more of a definitive answer of whether Paterno knew everything. And so that probably why it let people down. But Al was Paterno in this. He did an incredible job.
I want to go back to Colin McLaughlin for a second for Twin Peaks. In general, we're going to be talking about this a lot this episode. Kristen, were you surprised for the lack of love in general for Twin Peaks?
I absolutely was, because even, you know, yes, it was a weird show and it was definitely not for everybody, but it was from start to finish so beautifully done. All the performances were great. David Lynch, you know, had a complete vision, and every last episode was really honed to be pure Twin Peaks, but also something totally new. And Kyle MacLachlan played like 5 different roles, and he was so good. I was just shocked that it didn't get nominations.
I respectfully disagree about this show. I had a really hard time with it. I had binged the original Twin Peaks in preparation. Like, I was full on ready to go in and get this thing done. And I found it so off-putting and difficult and, like, not viewer-friendly. And I know that sounds so unsophisticated in a time of peak TV, but I'm wondering if some Emmy voters had the same reaction that I did, like, holy crap, what am I watching? And this is too dense and I can't get into it.
It's true, because the first episode especially is... like, you don't really see anybody from Twin Peaks, you know, that you really would recognize in a good portion of the first episode. It's quiet, meaning literally there is no sound, like nobody's talking. People are just staring at a box. It's very strange. It's not until you get deeper into the series that you start to, you know, I think maybe if people came to it hoping for a little more nostalgia and like, oh, look, there's the log lady and all of that. It definitely did not cater to that in any way. So it is entirely possible that voters tried it and really gave it an effort. But this was a show that made you work for it. And sometimes it didn't care whether you liked it or not. So, you know, that's definitely not a show that's going to curry favor with voters. On the other hand, I don't think David Lynch cares.
All right, Lynette, let's go through who should win in this category. Who is your pick for should?
I'm going to go to the easiest one, the ones that you will definitely say. Darren Criss for Versace. I think this is one case where there's so much incredible buzz for him. There's so much information out there. Pick this guy that I think the voters don't even have to watch. They just have to cross that in that box.
Kristen, how about you?
Darren Criss is definitely my should and will. Even if you didn't like the show, even if you just watch one episode for voting purposes, his performance is undeniably great. And you can watch any single episode, no matter what time the show works backwards chronologically, no matter what era you're looking at, he is giving an incredible performance and he really inhabits that character. So I feel like the show itself may not get much love at the Emmys, but I think he is almost a lock. And did I just jinx him? Because if I did, I'm going to be very upset.
Kristen, I was about to jinx him too. He is my should and will win. I adored this series. I adored his performance. I was going to go as far as to say, like, if there's one lock of any category at the Emmys, it's Darren Criss in this category. But again, I don't want to jinx him either. I just thought he was outstanding. I'm happy to see John Legend, and it's hard to root against Jesus Christ, but in this case, I think it's Darren Criss's Andrew Cunanan. Lynette, do you have a different will?
My will is correct, too. The will win is Jeff Daniels for The Looming Tower, simply because of the subject matter of The Looming Tower. It's a 9/11-ish story, and it's Jeff Daniels. They love him. They freaking love him.
Well, to your point, he was nominated both in the lead category for limited series and TV movie and supporting category.
This one you guys will be buying me drinks for.
I swear to God, if Jeff Daniels wins over Darren Criss, I may have to like chain myself to a tree and say that I'm going to starve myself, go on a hunger strike until the Academy writes that wrong, because that can't happen.
That'll be a fun one to be in the house, because I feel like that would be one of those audible gasps if he won. Like, oh, you'd hear something like that if Jeff won over Darren.
Before we move on to the next category, I just want to give a quick shout out to Jesse Plemons and the USS Callister, the Black Mirror episode. I thought it was great. I don't think he's going to win this category, but I was pleased to see it get nominated. But moving on to outstanding lead actress in a limited series or movie, this year's nominees are Laura Dern for The Tale, Jessica Biel, who played Cora in The Sinner, Michelle Dockery for Godless, Edie Falco, who played Leslie Abramson in Law & Order True Crime, The Menendez Murders. Regina King, who played Latrice Butler in 7 Seconds. And Sarah Paulson for American Horror Story Cult. Last year's winner, of course, was famously Nicole Kidman, who played Celeste on Big Little Lies. Kristen, what do you think of this category? Were there any notable snubs?
A lot of people were surprised that Kristen Milioti from Black Mirror did not get nominated because she has a big role. Jesse Plemons did get nominated, but her character has sort of a pivotal role, and she was excellent in that episode. Again, Elizabeth Moss for Top of the Lake, China Girl, the second season. She didn't get nominated here. Of course, she got nominated for drama actress. I think the second season of Top of the Lake wasn't as well received as the first. And so she was nominated for both during the first season of Top of the Lake and, of course, Handmaid's Tale. But I think voters maybe felt okay about leaving it off the list this time because it just wasn't as well received.
All right, Lynette, I'm going to turn to you. Who should win in this category?
I'm going to go ahead and do should and will for this one. There's a reason why I begged to interview Laura Dern for this episode. She blew me away in The Tale, this HBO movie. If you haven't seen it, this is one you got to binge. She plays a victim of sexual assault. And the whole way the movie is done is like this incredible flashback, and the woman who directed it, it's based on her own story. I can't say enough about it. Pretty much, as you can tell, I can't come up with the words. But I feel like, you know, Laura, only definitely at the Golden Globes, they love her there. She deserves it here.
Kristen, how about you? Who is your should win?
I loved Michelle Dockery in Godless, although she probably wasn't my favorite performance. I think Merritt Weaver probably was. My should win is crazy, though, and I'm just going to fully admit that it's crazy. I loved Law & Order, True Crime, The Menendez Murders. I loved Edie Falco as Leslie Abramson. The whole show was just so campy, and it was like horrible, but so good. Like, it was just this side of camp. The wigs were astounding. Her wig was so crispy, but the wig work was on point. But I would say that Edie Falco, even amidst all that just cheese and camp, she gave a really grounded and believable performance as Leslie Abramson. So I'm saying should in that I love her. And I love that she did that show, but I also know that it would be insane for her to win.
My should, I agree with Lynette, is Laura Dern for the reasons she eloquently outlined. My will is Regina King. She is an Emmy darling. She's won in the limited series category in both 2015 and 2016 for American Crime. Emmy voters adore her. She was terrific in 7 Seconds. I think she will eke it out.
It's tough because, like, Laura Dern is a favorite, and the movie, you know, it's a true life story about childhood sexual assault. Like, you know, Emmy voters or Oscar voters or any kind of awards voters, they love a good traumatizing child backstory. So, you know, she really could pull it out. But then Regina King, even though 7 Seconds wasn't a show that people particularly gravitated to, she is excellent in anything she does, and people do just love her. So I guess I'm going to say my will is Laura Dern, although I wouldn't be surprised at all if Regina King took it.
All right, up next, we will be going through the supporting actor and actress categories in this limited series of movies, as well as the best limited series and the best television movie. So stay tuned for that. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Prime original series, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. The show was created by executive producers Amy Sherman-Palladino and Daniel Palladino and stars Rachel Brosnahan, Alex Borstein, and Tony Shalhoub. A winner of 2 Golden Globes, it is now nominated for 14 Emmy Awards, including Outstanding Comedy Series, Outstanding Lead Actress in a Comedy Series for Rachel Brosnahan's performance as Midge Maisel. Open your heart to the show that Entertainment Weekly calls, quote, a perfectly cast delight. Consider it marvelous in all categories, including Outstanding Comedy Series. Hi, and welcome back to Chasing Emmy, the podcast for Emmy voters, their friends, and my relatives. I'm Henry Goldblatt, editor-in-chief of Entertainment Weekly, and I'm here with my pals Lynette Rice and Kristen Baldwin. And today we're talking about the limited series and TV movie categories. And I want to jump into the supporting actor in a limited series. Lynette, do you want to take us through last year's winner and this year's nominees?
Last year's winner was the beautiful Alexander Skarsgård, who played Perry, Nicole Kidman's husband, from Big Little Lies. That was a fun win. This year's nominees are, oh, look at here, Jeff Daniels. He played Frank Griffin in Godless. Brandon Victor Dixon, an actor from the show Power. He played Judas Iscariot in Jesus Christ Superstar Live. John Leguizamo, who played Jacob on Waco. Ricky Martin, he played Antonio on The Assassination of Gianni Versace. Edgar Ramirez, he was on Versace. Finn Wittrock, who played Jeffrey Trail on Versace. A lot of Versace. And Michael Stuhlbarg, who played Richard Clark on That Tower That Looms. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4. That's 7. Nice.
Kristen, who is your should win in this category?
My should win, honestly, is Finn Wittrock, who played Jeffrey Trail in The Assassination of Gianni Versace. Jeffrey Trail was one of, I believe he was Cunanan's first victim. He had been a Marine, a soldier. He was gay in the military, and it was very difficult for him. He knew Andrew through another one of his friends, David, and he got on Andrew's bad side, ended up murdered. And Finn Wittrock is so incredible in this role. There's an episode all about him being in the military and struggling with his homosexuality and having to keep it a secret. And he was just one of the things I love so much about the show is that it told the stories of the other people that Andrew Cunanan killed, who were just everyday people who didn't get the headlines because they weren't Gianni Versace. And these stories were incredibly moving, and I think he was phenomenal.
I'm going to agree with her, Finn, all the way, for everything that she just said, far more eloquently than I would ever say.
My should win and will win are the same. I'm going to go with Edgar Ramirez, who played Gianni Versace in such a touching and heartfelt and strong way. And I kept having to go back and like Google what Edgar Ramirez looked like in real life because he just sunk into that role so much. Like, I was so surprised to see him in real life after seeing him in that role. He was just incredible. I agree with you guys both that Finn Wittrock was terrific, but I think that Edgar should win and will win. Kristen, you have a different will win?
No, my will win is Edgar because I do think, obviously, his name is in the title. Gianni Versace, that was ostensibly what the show was about. And he was excellent. Once you watch that whole season, you realize that actually Versace is not in the show as much as some of these other characters, but he was so good in his scenes. I loved his scenes with Penelope Cruz, too. I really thought that their relationship was really loving and sweet. And yeah, so, I mean, these are all good. Jeff Daniels was great, but and people love him, but I don't think enough people saw Godless, so I think it will go to Edgar.
All right, Kristen, can you take us through supporting actress in a limited series or movie? Tell us about who won last year and who this year's nominees are.
Last year's winner was Laura Dern for her role in Big Little Lies. She's a hero. Love her. So this year's nominees are Sarah Bareilles, who played Mary Magdalene on Jesus Christ Superstar Live. Penelope Cruz, who played Donatella Versace on Assassination of Gianni Versace. Judith Light, National Treasure, played Marilyn Miglin in Assassination of Gianni Versace. Adina Porter, who played Beverly on American Horror Story Cult. Merritt Weaver, who was Mary Agnes in Godless. And Letitia Wright, who played Nish on Black Mirror.
So I was surprised not to see Laura Dern for Twin Peaks in this category. Again, it just goes to show the Emmy voters' sort of disdain for Twin Peaks this year. Nicole Kidman would have been not eligible for Top of the Lake, China Girl. And whatever you thought about Top of the Lake or Middle of the Lake or Bottom of the Lake or whatever we want to call it, she's effing Nicole Kidman like you give her Emmys and Emmy nominations when she's around. All right, Lynette, who is your should win for this category?
Should win. I'm going to go with Penelope Cruz, who played Donatella.
Penelope was very good in this role, but it has to go to National Treasure, Judith Light, as Marilyn Miglin. She was playing a real woman, though she has an empire of cosmetics and perfume. And her husband was murdered by Cunanan. And in this, she is sort of this grand dame who learns of her husband's murder and then all the insinuations about whether or not he was gay or hiding his sexuality. And she is just fierce and imposing and so, like, she's not in the show very much, but every minute she's on the screen, it's just captivating. And so I can't even want think about living in a world where she doesn't win.
Everything Kristen said, but multiply it by 4 billion times. I completely agree with you. And Kristen, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this. I have this theory that they shot a bunch of footage of Judith Light, and it was just for the one episode, because there's really just the one episode that focuses on the murder of her husband. But they loved her so much that they like spliced and diced a whole bunch of other footage. They probably brought her in back in additional days just to like have more Judith Light, because she was shoehorned in some other episodes that she probably didn't need to be in, but her performance is so captivating. You wanted her there. You wanted more of her.
I definitely think that was the case, because they, especially in the finale, you see more of Marilyn Miglin. And once she learns that Andrew's been captured, and they give her this whole extra scene. And once again, she kills it because she's a national treasure. But it's clear that, and it, you know, I don't think it's crazy to think that they were thinking, well, we want to have a solid Emmy campaign for her, so we better give her more screen time. I definitely don't put it past Ryan Murphy to be thinking strategically in that way. So I think they for sure added more Marilyn once they saw how great she was.
They could have changed the name of the show to American Crime Story, the Marilyn Miglin Story, and I would be totally fine with that. Okay, so obviously my will win is going to be Judith Light as well. Kristen, would you agree?
Of course.
Agree with you.
Great. Let's move on to TV movie, where the 2016 winner was Black Mirror's San Junipero. Just a sidebar, I'm embarrassed to say this. I only recently saw San Junipero in the past 5 or 6 months. It is one of the most gorgeous, lavishly, wonderfully produced hours of television I've ever seen in my life. It is just outstanding. And I'm ashamed to say I didn't see it before it won the Emmy last year, but I'm so glad I went back and revisited it. And I highly, highly, highly recommend if you haven't seen it. It's on Netflix. It's great. Kristen, Lynette, have you seen it?
I'm afraid of Black Mirror, so I just don't do it.
I totally understand that. And that was my initial reaction too, because I'm like the biggest scaredy cat in the world when it comes to TV. This isn't scary at all. It's very sweet and very, there's a twist, and of course I won't give away the twist, and it's just so smartly done, like, but it's not scary, I promise.
Okay, so I won't come away with it from it feeling an existential dread beyond what I normally feel in a given day.
No, your existential dread level will be perfectly, perfectly the same, I promise. And if I'm wrong, you can call me at 3 a.m. and yell at me and complain at me because I made you watch it. But it was really, really good. It's a long sidebar to say, watch San Junipero, the Black Mirror episode of one TV movie in 2016. It's outstanding. But this year's nominees are Fahrenheit 451 from HBO, Flint, a movie on Lifetime, Paterno, also on HBO, The Tale, also on HBO, and Black Mirror, USS Callister, which is on Netflix. Any notable snubs, Lynette?
Possibly Jesus Christ Superstar Live. I don't know, though. I don't know if it was necessarily a snub. I was a little let down by it. There were some gorgeous performances in it, but I'm not sure I necessarily. But there's some folks who thought it was a snub, so I'll say it's a snub.
I do wonder if they should start entering those live musicals into another category. I do think what you want to award in those types of productions are the staging, the camera work, the things that they do that are impressive because it's live, you know, whether it was Grease Live or this. And I think Jesus Christ Superstar Live is going to have a hard time competing with the production values of a Black Mirror or The Tale, but it is an impressive live special. So I wonder if they might want to start rethinking that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Kristen. I mean, also just judging John Legend's performance, say, against Darren Criss, it's like comparing apples and avocados or something. It just doesn't, they're two entirely different skill sets. Kristen, who is your should win in this category?
Going to go with Black Mirror, because I think that episode was something that everybody was talking about, and it was, you know, it had a really incredible twist and such a great cast. And, you know, obviously this is the format that works for Black Mirror, because it's a, you know, sort of every episode is self-contained and they're able to tell a wide range of stories. I think also just because all the other ones, is this terrible, but the other ones just seem so depressing. I mean, I know that Black Mirror is often depressing, but you got Flint, you got Paterno, you got more child sexual assault, The Tale, and then Fahrenheit 451, which didn't even really register with me because, I don't know, I love me some Michael B. Jordan, but it just really wasn't something that was on my radar.
Lynette, how about you? Who is your should win?
Mine is The Tale. I know it deals with a heavy subject matter, the sexual assault, but it's told in a different way, a way that I've never seen before. It's told in flashbacks. We go with Laura Dern's character as she discovers what happened to her, and she investigates it, which was such a unique way to tackle such a heavy subject. And I was just transfixed to this. I was completely blown away. So definitely The Tale should win.
My will and should win is Black Mirror, USS Callister. I loved the episode. Not quite as much as I love San Junipero, but I loved the episode. I thought it was very clever, and I think it'll be as rewarded as such. Kristen, do you have a will win?
I think the will win is The Tale. One would think a little bit more of a hopeful story in that it's this woman who's telling her story and how she got through it. And it's Laura Dern. It's an important issue. And they gave it to Black Mirror last year, so they may feel like, well, we've done that. Let's try something new.
Lynette, how about you?
I completely agree. I have to wonder, too, how many people will really take the time to watch Black Mirror. I definitely think it's The Tale.
All right. And the big kahuna of this episode is Outstanding Limited Series. And Lynette, do you want to take us through who won last year and this year's nominees?
Last year's winner was Big Little Lies. Boy, do I miss that. God, that was such a great production. This year's nominees are The Alienist on TNT, The Assassination of Gianni Versace, Genius Picasso, Godless, and Patrick Melrose.
I was surprised by some of the limited series that weren't nominated. We've talked about Twin Peaks and the reasons perhaps for that omission. We talked about Top of the Lake, China Girl, and we all felt it was sort of middle of the lake. Kristen, I know you loved Howard's End.
I loved it so much, and it hurts my heart that it didn't get a nomination and Haley Atwell didn't get one. You know, American Horror Story Cult is actually interesting, too. American Horror Story usually has a lock in this category, but Cult was a very polarizing season, and I think the only reason Sarah Paulson got nominated is because people freaking love Sarah Paulson and she can do no wrong. So I think surprise, but not completely shocking that it didn't get nominated. One that I think a lot of people were hoping for was American Vandal on Netflix.
I love that little show. Would you tell everyone what it's about?
It's a sort of a parody, comedy, crime docuseries, but it's about a kid who draws penises on everything. Is that correct?
Penises on cars and parking lots, yeah.
And how these crimes unfold. And it's, you know, sort of in the vein of Making a Murderer, but obviously from a comedic standpoint. And it really gained a lot of word of mouth over the years that it was eligible. So that was a snub. And of course, you know, Looming Tower, it loomed in other categories, but it did not loom in this category. Frankly, I did not enjoy Looming Tower. I thought it was capital P, capital T, prestige TV, but that didn't necessarily make it grossing or necessarily well done. But it just wasn't. It had some interesting performances, but overall, I didn't find the series that compelling. So I guess I'm not too surprised that it didn't make the cut.
I feel like this is definitely a category that screams, I got nominations based on my talent and my name, not because you all took the time to watch me, because I think that's the only reason why a Howard's End doesn't get the nomination. I think it's just, this is, they just clicked off boxes of what they heard and who stars in it.
Well, Patrick Melrose stars Benedict Cumberbatch. He has 6 nominations in the Outstanding Lead Actor in a Limited Series category. He's the second most nominated person in that category after Hal Holbrook, who had 7. So I agree with you. I think that, like, they see Benedict Cumberbatch, they see his name attached to something, and then they click a box.
And Genius was nominated last year. So I can't speak for The Alienist. I just don't know.
All right, I'm going to dive in. My will and should win are the same, and it's The Assassination of Gianni Versace, American Crime Story. I was so captivated from start to finish. The structure was a little flawed, but so interesting and ambitious, and Darren Criss's performance as Andrew Cunanan was so outstanding and carried the show. So I'm going to be on my feet applauding when this wins. Kristen, how about you?
I have to go with the same answer, should and will win for Gianni Versace. It's far and away the most sort of ambitious and moving of these entries. And I think it's certainly the most high profile, and it deserves it. As I'd be happy if Godless won as well, because that's a great limited series Western on Netflix with a predominantly female cast. But it's got to go to Versace.
Lynette, you got the final word in this category.
I agree. It's time for Ryan to dust off that velvet tux. He's got to put that back on because he's going back on stage. He's going to win this.
Well, that takes us through all of our limited series and TV movie categories. Up next, I hope you'll stay tuned for Lynette's conversation with Laura Dern from The Tale. Her performance is one that we all admire, so stay tuned for that.
Laura Dern stars in the HBO drama The Tale, a true story about a woman who comes to realize a relationship she had when she was but a tween was a tragic case of sexual abuse. Here to talk to me about the movie is Laura Dern herself. Laura, thank you so much for talking to me.
Absolutely.
It's such a pleasure. This movie just, well, it blew me away. It was extraordinary. I noticed, though, when I was doing some digging on it, that it was shot in 2015. Was the original intent that it would have theatrical distribution?
It was. We made it as a small independent film, and it really deeply independently financed. And Jennifer really worked to not only mine in the editing room the best film, but also to continue through financing independently, people to support the film. Given the subject matter, it was not easy to find financing. And we even did sort of a secondary shoot, which needed to be in New York City, because a lot of it took place in a rural setting, being her flashbacks and memories. And so we had to sort of continue to get it finished over the course of a couple of years. And then it went to Sundance as an independent feature. And amazingly, HBO, amidst a few independent feature offers from distributors, they offered not only to have it be seen as widely as possible using HBO as its platform, but really wanted to support a rollout of a global international presence and release and educational release with Q&As, a website to support survivors. And that was the most intriguing idea for Jennifer Fox. And so that's what we went with. And they've been remarkable. And it's touched millions of people, which is, you know, very different than it might have been if we'd been an independent feature with the subject matter.
How did it start? Did it start with a simple discussion between you and Jennifer?
It actually started with a discussion between myself and Brian De Palma, who called me and knew Jennifer and her work as a documentarian. And so that was the first call saying, she wants to do something very brave and very important. Will you look at the script? And then it was followed up by Oren Moverman, whose work I knew and loved his work as a filmmaker. And he basically said the same and said, I'll come on board and produce. This will be a brave journey, but one that I think we really need to support and explore. And then I read her script. And in fact, it was a very difficult read, as it is to see it, because it's so confronting. But what was so moving was that someone had captured this idea of the narratives we tell ourselves beyond the specific subject of the abuse that happened to her in childhood. I think it's so relatable for everyone in terms of how we survive our experience with the narratives we tell ourselves. So that really struck me, and I came on board, and we went through a process of developing the script and working on the script together to get it right and find the right cinematographer and group of actors to join on. And it was an amazing process.
Did it happen in real life, like the way it started in the movie? It began with a letter her mother found?
And it is amazing that as an actor reading it, there were moments where I'd say, okay, now as we're looking at the script, maybe this is too much. Or, you know, does that feel, even when I read The Tale, it felt slightly invented and almost flowery in its language. And she was like, yeah, Laura, because I wrote it as a 11, 12-year-old, you know, in my class. And that's the way I wrote it. In fact, here it is. And she showed me her original letters, the letters she received from her coach, her original story that she read with her teacher's notes. I mean, it's just, you know, it was an undeniable narrator in real life to have to reckon with and reconcile as the actor playing her.
How was the collaboration with her throughout the way? Was Would the questions, I'm just wondering, Eddie, if you would have your own burning questions just as a human at the same time you were asking for her direction. What was that like?
It was interesting. Yeah, it's complicated, right? I mean, I probably am very similar in my emotional experience of this as anyone who's a viewer, because I'm coming into it trying to understand what this person's journey is, and I'm also having to reconcile what my own life experiences are, what the narratives are that I've told myself, that loved ones of mine have told themselves. And so you're sitting in all of that, and you're sitting in where shame has forced you as an individual to silence yourself for a myriad of reasons. And while all that was happening, I was also trying to figure out how to honor her and her true story, but then also have to, in a way, let it all go in the moment and just try to make it honest as an actor, because you can't play someone's life. You know, you have to be moment to moment in the experience of it emotionally. So she had to relinquish some emotional control and let me find it emotionally. And so it was a dance that I think ultimately, you know, was a respectful dance, but a difficult one when you're playing someone. You're not only playing someone who's alive and there, but they're directing you. So there's no escaping that moment's differences of opinion to try to get to the same truth.
Did you ever see her get emotional watching you?
I did, and I've seen her get emotional, you know, in the press of it and other people's experience of watching the film. It's been, I am sure, an unbelievable journey for her.
What was it like working with Sophie? And do you say it Nalise? Is that how you say her last name?
She's incredible. She is a very empathetic, deep young girl. Now she's 14, but she was so young when we started. She was 11. But she had very understanding, progressive, thoughtful, and protective parents. They were really there every step of the way. And Jennifer, probably more than any filmmaker imaginable, was so fiercely protective of her that I don't know if you've, you know, seen in interviews or whatever in the description of even how they did the actual scene of abuse that is in the film, but even to the point of, it was a double at moments, but the things that were her on camera saying dialogue, which was incredible, was she was standing up and a lateral mattress was behind her. And so she literally never laid in a bed. And when she was doing dialogue with Jason Ritter, he was standing, you know, a few feet from her with a lateral bed behind him. And they were just talking, standing up. And I don't know that a lot of people would have thought through that with such care, if they didn't recognize trauma from anything that feels inappropriate or uncomfortable at that age. So I was very moved by Jennifer and the company's care, as well as an Actors Guild and everybody working together to be protective, but I think given the subject matter, particularly so.
What a challenge to have to do those scenes, because you have to establish how Jason's character pulled her into his lair, so to speak, without being too salacious about it. I mean, it was extraordinarily uncomfortable, and yet we needed to go through that journey. But it was amazing what it transpired to, and that it was just enough, like, oh, goodness.
Well, and that also speaks to his bravery and the casting of him, you know, that he is sweethearted and he's also boyish. And I think Jennifer recognized both the need and the interest in having him not look like a perpetrator, whatever that looks like to people. But there is a stereotype about who your children are unsafe with. And I think she obviously wanted to smash that theory, because most of the time it's happening with someone that you feel comfortable leaving your child with, a family member, a coach, a babysitter, all of this. So it was profound that he was boyish and that he played it in a very loving way. Because in his own mind or in his own sickness, there was an idea that there was a connection there. And most actors would play it that they want to assault or that they deem what they're doing unhealthy. And obviously, that's not the case in their mind. They're justifying the behavior. So it was really interesting to listen to those conversations between Jason and Jennifer. And in terms of a younger self and myself, we did a lot of rehearsal together, Jennifer and myself. And the other actress, make sure that Isabel and I both had similar mannerisms, that we understood what the character was going through from two different age perspectives. Like, all of that was fascinating.
The movie ends with a confrontation, but I was curious if there was any discussion with Jennifer about an even bigger payoff, like you'll see this man in court, or did you always know that's how it ends?
There was. And I think at times she was tempted to write something more dramatically fulfilling. And I kept coming back to, but how did it happen in real life? What did that feel like in real life? And what can we get away with that feels like you've had voice and also sticks to the truth? Because 99% of the time, there isn't the court moment, as we've seen. Or in this case, she didn't come to it at an age where she had the support of the law on her side. If we remedy that by removing statute of limitations, as I know New York is looking into, that will be a massive paradigm shift for survivors to be able to have a day in court.
If HBO had an official repertory group, I feel like you'd be one of the leading members. Do you have a permanent phone line going straight into the network? Are you going to stay? Will this relationship continue forever?
I don't know, man. They haven't gotten sick of me so far, so I'm very grateful for that, because I have definitely played some of my favorite characters for them without question, and each thing I've done for them has been pretty ballsy material, radical, true stories, shit shows, you name it. We've had a lot of fun together, I have to say, and they cared about visionaries and filmmakers having their voice and their autonomy, and that's really, really impressive too.
Lord, this nomination was so deserved. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you so much for your, not only your time, but also your care in considering the subject matter and spreading the word so that more people get it. I'm just thrilled that so many people are connecting to it and feeling moved by it.
All right. Thank you. Bye now.
That's going to do it for another episode of Chasing Emmy. Thank you so much, Lynette, for your conversation with Laura Dern. That was terrific. Special thanks to our producers, Patrick and Christina, and we'll see you next week. Today's podcast was brought to you by the Prime original series, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, from executive producers Amy Sherman-Palladino and Daniel Palladino. It stars Rachel Brosnahan, Alex Borstein, and Tony Shalhoub, and has now been nominated for 14 Emmy Awards, including Outstanding Comedy Series. Consider it marvelous in all categories.